The Fan on Demand.
We're back. You ready? Tim and Sid. Hour number three. Swag!
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Tim and Sid. I'm Sid Cicciolo. Tim McAuliffe under the weather. The election just tuckered him out. Coming up momentarily, Stephen Brunt will be in studio. Not only co-host of Primetime Sports, not only one of the best writers in the country. His latest book is 100 Grey Cups, This Is Our Game. So we're going to talk Grey Cup and maybe a little election. Election's still on the brain. Meetings between the NHL and the NHLPA are ongoing. The secrecy continues. One of two major stories in New York right now. The second is a nor'easter, or winter storm to the layperson, that right now has engulfed Central Park. I'm looking at a picture here on Twitter of Central Park. It's a whiteout. There's nothing but snow. You can't see the skyline. And in the middle of this mess of little information and snow is Ian Mendez with a phone that works from Sportsnet. Hi, Ian.
Sid, how are you? I'm doing this on the hotel phone, so no chance of the cell cutting out.
What happened to your cell?
It died on me yesterday. So I was supposed to go on. I know with Millard and McLean, I think the Hockey Central at noon guys, and literally 2 minutes before that interview was supposed to go on, it looked, and my BlackBerry froze for like for 2 hours.
Well, timing is everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Holy cow. See, I'm the type of personality that happens to me. I stay calm, I stay relaxed, and I throw my phone against the wall. How did you handle it?
Well, I was thinking of all the days for the phone to die. You're thinking, you know what? And, you know, I tweet a lot of nonsense.
Not true, sir.
You know,
I'm a big follower of the Ian Mendez.
Yeah, you know, ridiculous Saved by the Bell jokes. And
well, it's important.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, well, yesterday might be a day when people could actually use some information from somebody covering the CBA meetings. And I got it up and running just before Donald Fehr's media availability. So it did work out in the end. But I did stay calm.
Ian Mendez from New York here on Tim and Sid Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Do we know where they are today?
No. And you know what, Sid, that's actually a good thing, because as you mentioned, it's an absolute mess outside of New York. I am on 37th Street right now, and my hotel is looking right at the Empire State Building, which I think is three blocks away on 34th. I can't even see, I'm looking at it right now from my hotel room, I can't even see the building. I mean, it's three blocks away, but it's like you said, it's like virtually a whiteout here. This thing keeps changing from rain to snow. So it's a complete mess. So the one nice thing is, when we've covered this CBA stuff before, they've told us a location, and we basically have to stand on the sidewalk for hours at a time. Just, you know, there's 6 to 10 media members. We just sit there and wait until the meeting wraps up. Well, at least the one benefit of not knowing where it is, everyone can basically hunker down in their hotel rooms, or if they're from New York, their offices, and wait for the emails to come in from the league or the PA to say, meeting's wrapped up, here's where we're going to do the media availability. So the one nice benefit of the undisclosed location is we don't have to freeze today.
It's almost as if you're covering a trial and the jury's just been sequestered once all the arguments are made. And you know you're going to get a phone call at some point. You don't know when, you don't know how, and you don't know what you'll be doing in the middle of it, but you know it's coming, and you just got to sit there and wait.
Yeah. In fact, it would be nice if I could get, what's the term I'm looking for here, where you get thrown off the jury for discussing the case publicly. I'd love it if somebody was listening to me here, and then they just, they sent me home.
Well, you couldn't get home right now if you tried, it sounds like.
Well, and that, you know what, and that's the other thing to mention, too, is that yesterday there was 13 players involved in the meetings for the NHLPA. Today that number is down to 8. And, you know, one big player that was here yesterday was Sidney Crosby. And Sid's not here today because he bolted, I think, around noon or just before noon to get out of here, because if you look at the LaGuardia and JFK and Newark flight schedules, they basically canceled everything. So for a lot of players that maybe had other plans for tomorrow or wanted to get out, they decided to bail. So I don't read anything into that of, you know, hey, Crosby's not here today. He was here yesterday. I only look at that as simply a weather-related thing. Maybe he didn't want to be stuck here. And we don't know, Sid, if there's going to be meetings beyond today. I think yesterday there was a real good sense that they would meet again today. I'm not so sure that they meet again tomorrow. And again, people at home who are listening and say, oh, well, if they don't meet on Thursday, is that a bad sign? I don't think so necessarily. I think if they don't meet tomorrow, there's a good chance that they need to get have some internal meetings here. And I think whether there's a proposal exchange or not, the Players Association has a hard time trying to disseminate the information to 700 players. And that might take a couple days to get the information out correctly. So I wouldn't be surprised if they meet here again today, and then they take a couple days break to just sort of each side figure out where the other is and where we really are here in the negotiations.
Ian Mendez of Sportsnet here on Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Ian is in New York watching a nor'easter pound New York. It's not like they haven't had enough weather issues in and around that area. Ian, I understand, you know, the caution that we all need to take here because some innocent things could happen. You try and read too much into it, yada, yada, yada. And I'm sure Sidney Crosby has a perfectly good reason why he can't be there today. But as I sit here, I'm just going to level with you. I'd feel a lot better if he was in that room right now. And I'm sure it's an innocent reason. It's a scheduling reason. You know, maybe all the players are going to get briefed, like you said, over a 24-hour period, so he could have left early anyway. I'd feel better if the best player in the game was in the room.
Yeah, and I completely see that point, too, because I think a lot of people looked at it as a positive step that Sid, who wasn't supposed to be there, I think, as of Monday, you know, showed up and was there Tuesday. And now that he's gone again, yeah, I think you can certainly look at it from that perspective. But again, they're trying to say that, look, this is weather related. It has nothing to do with you know, the state of the negotiations. And I don't know. I'm at the point where, and I think a lot of hockey fans like this, because remember when it was probably about a month ago when the league finally said, look, we'll do 50-50. I think a lot of people thought that the lockout was reaching a conclusion. And that was a real roller coaster sort of time for fans. And the last thing you want to do is put the fans, who are the people that basically have people like you and me employed and have this entire NHL functioning the way that it does, the last thing you want to do is put them on a needless roller coaster by creating optimism yesterday, and then today it gets dashed, and you start looking at little signs. Like, for me, the one thing that I'm going to look for today, Sid, is if both sides do exactly what they did yesterday, I think that's good. I think if they sit down in a room together for more than 5 hours, and they come out of it and they say very little, or they say that out of respect for the process they don't want to talk, that's great news. But the minute you get one side coming out and saying anything that could be construed as inflammatory, I think that we're back to square one. And so it is a roller coaster. You look for little signs, whether it's Sidney in a meeting or not in a meeting, or things that are said or not said by you know, Donald Fehr or Bill Daly or Gary Bettman. It's a real tenuous time, but I think today is probably the day where a lot of people are looking for the signs to see where this thing is headed.
Ian Mendez of Sportsnet here on Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The NHL and its Players Association continue to meet under a shroud of both snow and secrecy in the city of New York. I want to bring it more to an Ottawa hook here, Ian, and I know Daniel Alfredson made an appearance in Cornwall a few days ago. And with this umbrella of optimism that's opened up over the hockey world, I found his comments very interesting. Long story short, he's from the show me state, it feels like. He's not going to get too high based on a few reports here and there. Is that a smart way to go about this?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I thought he was from Sweden, not from Missouri. But
Sweden
yeah.
is the show me country, though.
Yeah,
did you know that?
You
okay.
Yeah, I did not.
Just made that up.
Something every time.
Just made that up.
I come on. So, you know, the one thing about Daniel Alfredson is he's a real cerebral guy. And you know, I don't want to paint a brush of NHL players, but there's not that many guys that are that I would classify as quote-unquote book-smart people. But Daniel's one of them. And he was heavily, heavily involved, if you recall, in the lockout negotiations in 2004-05. He was part of the PA's executive team. He's very well respected amongst the players. And I look at his comments, and I was actually at that event in Cornwall, and I spoke to him. And, you know, the first thing I asked him was, hey, you're a little more optimistic that these talks are on. And he was, like, right away he shot me down. I was like, no, actually, no. Until we see some substantial movement, he says that there's no reason to get excited. And I think that comes from a couple things. This is a guy that's been in the league 17 years, and he's lived through a lockout. He understands, and he's been inside the room, so he knows how these negotiations work. And I think that's probably a really good approach to take, too, for fans. And it's tough because, like I said, as a fan, you just want to hear that the game's coming on, so you're looking for any little sign. But what something like Daniel Alfredson is saying is, look, until there's substantial progress, let's not look for glimmers of hope. And he's a real, again, he's a smart guy, but he's a realistic guy. And he's also a guy that he knows that this is it for him. And I think he's trying to look at this really in a positive way, because I think, quite frankly, if the season does get wiped out, and I think most of us agree that it seems like a long shot that it does, but if the season gets wiped out, that's it for him. He's probably played his last game in the National Hockey League. So of all the players that are coming into this, I mean, him, maybe Teemu Selänne, there might be a couple of other guys that approach it with the same mindset that he does, whereas, you know, if you're a younger guy, maybe you don't look at the game and the situation as big picture as somebody as Daniel Alfredson does.
It's an interesting fact, because the one thing that always sticks out from the washed-out 04-05 season was we never got to say a proper goodbye to Steve Yzerman. And we never got to say a proper goodbye to guys who, quite frankly, deserved it because of the circumstances. And I know the big picture is hockey needs to be back and the fans need to be rewarded and yada, yada, yada. But guys who've spent years in this league helping to build it sometimes just fade away in this cesspool of ridiculousness that is a lockout, and that's a crime.
Yeah, and, you know, for us in Ottawa, we've for those of us who have covered Daniel Alfredson for, you know, the better part, for me, for a decade, and for other people, 15, 16 years, he's a pleasure to be around, and you don't want his career to end where he wanted to come back, but the game didn't want to come back. And I think that's the thing. That's frustrating. I'm sure if you went back to the even that, you know, you look back to that 94 lockout and you think there's a lot of guys who after that 94 lockout, they were never the same. Like, and I'll look at a guy like Doug Gilmour, for example. Like, you look at Doug Gilmour's 2 years before that, 92-93 and 93-94, he was an outstanding player. He was probably one of the best three players in the National Hockey League. And when the game came back in January of 95, he wasn't the same guy. And that's the fear, is that, and if you look at Gilmour's career beyond that, he was never the same. It seemed like some guys never got that mojo back from the prolonged lockout. And that's the other fear, is that even if a season doesn't get wiped out, that if it's a season that's delayed or starts in December or January, what's the rust factor going to be like for a Daniel Alfredson or a Teemu Selänne or some of these guys that are some of the best players in the game, but we're maybe going to see a watered-down version of them here moving forward?
Ian, good stuff as always. Have your shovel handy. And not just to shovel snow, but whatever rhetoric comes down the pipe over the next little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A lot of uses for shovels around here.
Yes.
Sure.
Enjoy it, Ian. Thanks for this.
Okay, anytime, sir.
Ian Mendes of Sportsnet, covering what anyone really can of this NHL lockout and the talks that are ongoing in New York, in a snow-covered New York right now between the players and the owners. Projection time. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, now projects that after I tell you Celtic are up 1-0 on Barcelona, you will go to the family of Sportsnet channels for full Champions League coverage this afternoon. Except, well, the Juve game's there too. So Celtic up 1-0 on Barcelona, a bit of an upset. We can also project Stephen Brunt. We'll talk Grey Cup in studio next. I'm Sitzik Solo. This is Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Tim and Sid.
Sound off, players. How do you get this party started?
Tennessee.
How do you get more? Hey. How do you disappoint your mom?
Tennessee.
How do you get more swagger in your wagger?
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sid Sixero, Tim and Sid. Tim under the weather. Only on this show, and I'm not entirely sure we can get away with it, only on this show can we bring on Stephen Brunt with the Biebs. But so goes life right now in the Canadian Football
League. That's right.
In terms of entertainment. Stephen Brunt in studio. So Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yes.
Halftime show. We got the Biebs. Gordon Lightfoot.
Gordon Lightfoot.
Legend.
Legend.
One of Bob's favorites.
Yep.
And Marianas Trench, who can rock out. They're pretty good.
Yeah, they're kind of mediocre, actually, but it's okay.
Who's missing from the set list? If Stephen Brunt, regardless of size of budget, is booking this halftime set list.
Well, that's who would be on my all-Canadian set list?
100th Grey Cup.
Who would I have there?
You are producing it.
See, I would have, like, the Weaker Thans, you know, from Winnipeg. John K. Sampson is the great Canadian rock band. I like the Arkells from Hamilton.
Arkells are good.
They played pregame Grey Cup last year because I know, because I delivered the Argo Sucks button to them that they wore on stage.
That was you?
Yeah. I shot them downstairs. I'm very proud of that, actually.
Very good.
It looked great on the huge screen at BC Place. Guys with Argo Suck on their lapels. So, yeah, I did that. I'd have to think about who the kind of throwback. You need kind of a throwback act, too. You know, don't you?
You do. Well, obviously, Rita McNeil.
There you go. Representing the East. Representing Breton Island.
East Coast? Rita McNeil. Perfect.
Yeah. Hey, Rosetta. It'd be good. You know, I like them. They're my buds.
Stephen Brunt, the author of 100 Grey Cups, This Is Our Game.
Joel Plaskett. How about him? That'd be good.
That'd be good, too.
Yeah, Joel Plaskett, Emergency. That'd be excellent.
Finally, Cardi rounds out the set list. There's your halftime show. A two-hour halftime show for the 100th Grey Cup. Here's my first question, Steve. Do the Argos have to be in this game this month for it to be deemed a success in this market?
No, I don't think it. I think it would have no impact. The game sold out, so that's not an issue. That has been an issue in other years. The last time the game was here was, 07, and they sold out because Saskatchewan got in the game.
Yeah.
Saskatchewan is the economic engine of Canadian football.
They travel very well.
They travel well. They watch TV. They do everything. They're fantastic. So if Grey Cup's in trouble, just make sure Saskatchewan's in. But yeah, I think this thing is a standalone. It's got to be a standalone, right? It's got to be like, and it's not like the Super Bowl, but it's got to be something where you go to the Grey Cup because it's the Grey Cup. It doesn't matter who's in it.
So the buzz you think will remain, and that's where I'm going with this from a buzz perspective.
Yeah.
It will be the same whether Ricky Rae is in the game or not.
Well, the Argos have been kind of invisible here this year. In my experience.
That's you're bang on. That's kind of where I'm going.
So I don't know that anyone would know the difference. Yeah. And the Grey Cup, there's two different things going on here. One is that the Grey Cup is a self-contained event where the same people show up from the same parts of Canada every year, and it's part of their own ritual, and they make the party wherever they go. Now, if you go to Regina, like they are next year, that means the whole town will also participate in said party, or in Winnipeg or in Calgary, less so in Vancouver. And in Montreal, there's always a party anyway, so it doesn't matter. You can go to Crescent Street and say – you can say it's Grey Cup, or you can just say you're on Crescent Street. It doesn't matter.
Or it's
right?
Tuesday.
Or it's Tuesday, exactly. But this one, the challenge for the people organizing the Grey Cup here, and they've decided to go – because they've decided to go this route. Last time it was here, if you were within Grey Cup World, which was down around the stadium
yep.
and in the usual places, you know, Spirit of Edmonton and Ryderville and Tigertown and all that stuff, it was pretty darn good. You know, they had bands. They had some good concerts. Those were all well attended. And the same people were drinking beer in the same places as they would if they were in Winnipeg. What they're trying to do here this year is expand it out into the city, you know, up from Front Street. So Nathan Phillips Square and all that stuff, and try and make it into something that the big city of Toronto, which has been, there's been kind of a studied obliviousness to Grey Cups when they've been here in the past. Even the greatest game I've ever seen, 1989, Saskatchewan-Hamilton at what was then the Sky Dome. 43-40, unbelievable. You know, half the stands are Saskatchewan people, half the stands are Ticat people. Outside, if you'd walked one block from that game, you would have had no idea what was going on. So the challenge this year, and they've taken it on, said, we're going to do the 100th game here, bring it back to Toronto, get it in front of all the corporate people, and we're going to make it a big deal with all kinds of extra government money to try and make it a big deal.
Just make Young Dundas Square yours. Like, just put stuff up there. Go to
you
know, Nathan
you,
Phillips.
But you walk by Young Dundas Square occasionally, right? There's always something going on.
True.
There. And
true.
And is anybody going to look over there and say, well, this isn't the XYZ festival or some corporate event. This is the football? I don't know.
Yeah. I got to be honest. When I go down, I always get distracted by the lights. I never really look at what's going on in the square itself. I look at all that awesome advertising and the big Gord Martineau photo, and it's all fun.
But you know, people should my recommendation to people is go. Check it out. It's fun. It's it's an unpretentious, it's not a velvet rope event. It's a blast. If you want to go and have some fun and meet the guys playing in the game, probably. They're usually stumbling around the streets the week before the game. You can meet anybody and get in just about anywhere. And it's No, it's not fancy. I'm sure they will add some stuff to try and give it some gloss. But, you know, the best of the Grey Cup is really simple. It's just folks who like football, drinking beer, listening to music. That's it.
What's better than that?
That's okay. You know, I like it.
And Justin Bieber.
And Justin fits in so perfectly with that demo, right?
How much do you think that costs a CFL? Seriously.
I don't know. It's only the whole thing's only 20 minutes, right?
He's doing two tracks max.
Max.
So to book Justin Bieber, you and I are putting together an event. We want Justin Bieber. Two songs. What's that going to run us?
It's a good question. You know, McCown was involved with the last Grey Cup. You should ask him when he stumbles in. Because he was...
he stumbles in.
Well, you know...
You're making him out to be this disheveled alcoholic just walking
through
the
he's door. Not an alcoholic
no,
at all.
No.
disheveled, it depends on the day. But no, he was involved in trying to book the halftime act last time, I think. So he probably has some idea.
I just have... It's stuff like that that sticks out for me. Like, what? And everything... To quote the Million Dollar Man, everybody has a price.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it cost to get Justin Bieber up to the 100th Grey Cup? Maybe we'll get someone on to find out. Stephen Brunt in studio. Timmonson, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, author of 100 Grey Cups, This Is Our Game, 100th Grey Cup, now weeks away. Is the 89 game the greatest single moment for you in the history of this extremely storied tradition, or is there something else for any other reason that sticks out to you?
Well, it's the best football game I've ever seen, period, in any league. And I'm not one of these... I always hate the CFL, NFL. Oh, I only love the CFL. Oh, I only love the NFL. It's because it's better. Or, you know, I'm pretty Catholic taste when it comes to football, right? CFL, NFL, CIS, NCAA, anything. Like, I love football. I spent last weekend watching everything.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. But the 89 Grey Cup game is the best football game I've ever seen from an entertainment point of view. Just fantastic. But, you know, sentimentally, I'm a Hamilton guy. So we lost that game. We, the Tiger Cats, lost that game. So I would have to look at something like, the 99 game that they won with Ronnie Lancaster. I remember I had a little tear in my eye at the press box in Vancouver. You know, 86, they weren't supposed to win. That was a great one. But the big one was 72. So I was like 13. Ian Sunder, last play field goal in Hamilton. You know, the first Grey Cup game in Hamilton since going back to like the 1930s or the 20s with the Tigers. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Will you be the one this year to ask both coaches whether they will ask their players to abstain from any romantic activity
to
the game?
You know, the origins of that question are with the late Jim Shakey Hunt, who is, you know, he should, if I'd done a different kind of Grey Cup book, he would have had his own chapter.
More than one.
Yeah, and it would have been, but it's a different book. It's a really different book.
I hear you.
And Shake... he covered 50 Grey Cups.
That's unbelievable.
I was over at CBC the other day, and they pulled something out of the archive show they do, and they had an interview. They were playing this interview from 1958 where someone was interviewing Smurl Lawson, who was the star of the first Grey Cup game in 1909. And I listened to this, and voice is kind of familiar, you know, although not quite the same tone. And then at the end, it was Jim. It was really? Shaky doing that in 1958. But Shakey was, he was the guy who invented the sex question. And
that's one of my favorite, oddly enough, one of my favorite Grey Cup traditions.
It's great. And I think Terry Jones now has taken it on.
Picked up the mantle, and it's fantastic.
My favorite year was that they always, you know, most of the guys try and be funny about it, the coaches. But, you know, Wally Buono, who's like the straightest guy in the world, once decided to that he took that question and did a whole lecture on safe sex to a bunch of FRC people, you know, Football Reporters of Canada. Now, you know, sex and Football Reporters of Canada don't generally go together. I got to tell you, there's not a lot of, you know, it's not the sexiest group in the world. You know, it's,
I don't know.
Especially Greg Cupway.
You guys have nice eyes. I don't know about that.
But he went into this whole thing about responsibility and, you know, using protection. And honest to God, it was great. It was really funny. He wasn't trying to be funny.
You wanted to break at the end, save sex on three.
He wasn't trying. He was very serious about it. So, anyway.
Stephen Brunt in studio. Tim has said Sportsnet 590, The Fan, 100th Grey Cup. On the horizon, the book from Stephen Brunt, 100 Grey Cups, This Is Our Game, out there now. If I could just divert from the game itself, Stephen, just ask...
I think we have already done that, but it's okay.
When's the last time you saw a GM fired before a playoff game involving his team?
Never.
This Eric Tillman story is weird.
It's a really weird story because it plays to that whole... You know, the CFL is this tiny little world, right? And most of the time, the tininess of it is great because it's kind of this mom-and-pop operation and everybody... You know, Eric Tillman has worked for teams, six teams, I think, including two that no longer exist, right? He's perpetually somebody's GM or somebody's player personnel guy. But this is where it gets weird because he gets the job in Edmonton after being run out of Saskatchewan. You know, obviously people understand that there was an issue there. He had a legal issue there. There was a summary judgment against him. He did get an absolute discharge. I always want to be clear about that. But he couldn't live in Saskatchewan. He couldn't be the GM of that team anymore. So Edmonton waits a little while until it cools off, and they pick him up because they need to rebuild the franchise. And Eric's really good at what he does. And then he immediately makes a signature move, trades away a Hall of Fame quarterback for Stephen Giles and some other guys. But Stephen Giles, who no one believes in at this stage, except for Eric Tillman. And there's, all these eyebrows are raised in Edmonton where they care about this stuff. And on goes the season, and it's not going very well.
And right now, the Eskimos, media-wise, that's the only game in town.
That's the only game in town.
So the spotlight can't be any brighter for them than it is.
And it's all on Eric, that trade. He's defending it. So we get to the end of the year. Now, the other part of that is that there have been rumbles going back months that Eric Tillman's ultimate destiny was not Edmonton, that it was Toronto. Because David Braley had, he worked for David Braley, and when David had the Lions, they won a Grey Cup together. David likes him, apparently. Things were not going that well in Toronto. Jim Barker was on a thin ice here as the GM. And so there's this second rumor floating around that Eric's coming back to Toronto, presumably to become the GM of a team where he traded Ricky Ray, Hall of Fame quarterback, who still looks pretty good.
Well, he was being proactive in the deal.
He was kind of getting ahead of things. So then they fire him, and there's all this stuff that comes out mostly in Terry Jones' columns, but he's the man in Edmonton, about how Eric hasn't been there, hasn't been around, how he's run people out of the organization, though he wasn't around. All kinds of weird, weird rumors about Eric. Plus, of course, Eric still lives in Regina.
Yeah, didn't move to Edmonton permanently.
Yes.
Which is also potentially another sticking point.
So, and the new president of the community-owned team stands up as though he owns the team and says, well, I decided to do this for no reason, really, but just did.
If the Eskimos win, man, this...
Oh, it's a great can of worms.
It'll have a lot more legs.
I'll tell you, covering the CFL over the years, it's had its ups and downs. But the great thing about it is it
gives you great ink.
Stuff.
Right? Yeah.
You think this kind of stuff would happen in another league?
Nope.
Nor would you have one guy who owns 25% of the league.
True. But let's just say an Eskimos in the Grey Cup after firing Eric Tillman before the Eastern Semi would be quite the story.
Yeah, as long as they don't hire him for the Argonaut job during Grey Cup week
or
something.
They do it during Grey Cup week, day before. They hire Eric Tillman. Stephen Brunt, the book is 100 Grey Cups. This is our game. Mr. Brunt, always a pleasure.
Hey, thank you.
What is this? What am I hearing? This is for you, Steve. One more time. Who is this? The Weaker Then.
The Weaker Then. It's John Kay.
This is for asking you shall receive on this show, Stephen.
Canada's poet laureate. He should be.
Is our motto. Thank you very much. That's Stephen Brunt. We're going to step aside. We'll wrap up Tim and Sid next. I'm Sid Sixolo. This is Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Now, more Tim and Sid on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sid Zixero, this is Tim and Sid. Tim McAuliffe, under the weather. Get well, Tim. Stomach was killing him yesterday. It's a trooper. Coming up, Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan. Earlier in the show, we talked to Sam Mitchell, and we had some interesting things to discuss concerning Vince Carter. And one of the men that we discussed at the time of Vince's trade from the city was Rob Babcock, who is currently an assistant GM with the Timberwolves. Rob has been nice enough to join us right now. How you doing, Rob? Welcome to Tim and Sid. Hi, Rob. You there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, we hear you now. Sorry, a problem on our end. We appreciate the time today. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, Rob, you've been kind enough to join us, so I'm going to get right to it. I'm not going to waste your time. The backstory is this: we had Vince Carter on the station yesterday, and he just lamented of his time in the city, and we had Sam Mitchell on the phone today, and we talked about how it did end with Vince and the organization. And long story short, Sam told us a story where Vince went to him in Indianapolis the night before you dealt him and said, I want to be here. A lot of stuff's going on, but I want to be here. I want to stay. Sam then told us he went to you with this knowledge, and you had pretty much made up your mind that this was the right course of action. Is anything I've said incorrect?
Well, the only thing is that's incorrect is it was more than I just made up my mind. We had already agreed to the deal. The deal hadn't been done, but we had already agreed to do the deal.
Okay, so you in Jersey had signed off on it. Had you made the trade call? Like, was that official?
No. But we had verbally agreed to do a deal, and you know, once I verbally agreed to do a deal, it's done.
Okay. That was the part of the story that wasn't given to us. I have to ask, Rob, out of curiosity. Let's say you hadn't firmed things up with the Nets. Let's say there was wiggle room here, which apparently there wasn't. But what if there was? Would you have changed your mind at all?
Well, I you know, just player coming to a coach and telling him to change his mind, at that point, you know, I think you at least sit down and discuss and find out, okay, you know, what's changed? You know, why the change of thought? And what's this to say that that's going to work now all of a sudden? When he asked to be traded, from the beginning, and you know, that's what we ended up doing. So, yeah, I don't think you ever, you know, close the door on something if there's still a chance that you can work something out. But, you know, it was past the fact anyway. So it was already a done deal.
Even if, on the line with the assistant GM of the Timberwolves, Rob Babcock here on Tim and Sid Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Rob, let's say he comes to you and there's still wiggle room and you're thinking about it. From your seat, considering everything he's told you privately and some of the things that were floating out there publicly, if he says to you, Rob, I'm in. I'm going all in with you. I know what's happened. I'm committing to the organization. Are you completely convinced?
No. Like I said, you have to. It can't be just a you know, one-time thing. You have to look at what's all of a sudden, why the change? Is this a genuine change? Is this something that, you know, you really believe in what we're doing here? You really believe in this team? You know, will your teammates accept you? Will the fans accept you? You know, you have all those questions to ask. And, you know, I mean, it never happened anyway, so you never close the door on anything.
Yeah.
But I think you have to get a lot more answers before you change your mind on anything. And you just, I mean, hey, if you broke up with your girlfriend, and you know, 2 weeks later she comes back, you know, I made a mistake. I really want to get back together. Are you just going to jump back and get together right away? You know, I think maybe you think about it, but you know, you're gonna have to find out a lot more answers before you decide to get back together.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir, Rob. All the girls I broke up with. Oh, I want to get back to you. So I'm not, you know.
Hey, sorry, I hit a sore spot there. You know, I mean, didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, exactly. On the line with Rob Babcock, assistant GM of the Minnesota Timberwolves, here on Tim and Sid Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Rob, we appreciate you coming on with us because we literally just called you and you said yes, and you're a good man for doing it. But last question before I let you go: is there anything about how it played out back then that you regret?
No, I mean, we did everything, you know, I think the way we should have. You know, I mean, it was a long process. There's not much that we could do about it. We were adamant about not making the trade unless we could get, you know, some type of value back, and understanding that any time a player comes out and demands a trade, that it immediately lowers the player's value significantly. And, you know, that's always a problem. You know, so we did the best we could with it, and waited out, tried to get the best offer we possibly could. And, you know, was it value? No, it wasn't value. But the bottom line is our winning percentage went significantly up as soon as the trade was made.
Rob Babcock, assistant GM for the Minnesota Timberwolves, former GM of the Toronto Raptors. Rob, again, we appreciate it. Have a good day. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Take care.
Rob Babcock, assistant GM of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And again, to stress, everyone's busy. Everyone's got a life to live and a career they need to tend to. We just called him, and he said, no problem. And he knew what we were going to talk about, and he was cool with it, so we appreciate that a great deal. So the one thing Rob says was incorrect, just so we're clear, about the story. And in case you're just tuning in, Sam Mitchell on the show today said he had a conversation with Vince Carter the day before Carter was traded in Indianapolis, and Carter said he wanted to stay. Sam relayed this to Rob. This is according to Mitchell. Sam relayed this to Rob, and according to Sam, Rob wasn't having it and was doing the deal. According to Rob, that deal's already done. So it wasn't an option of, well, can we go back and talk? According to Rob Babcock, the trade call hadn't been made, but the deal with New Jersey had been agreed to in principle. And as far as Rob was concerned, whether he even wanted to change his mind or not, deal's a deal. So there you go. Let's see rapid fire. Come down in 3, 2.
Rapid fire.
Now joining me in studio, the man who just got Rob Babcock on the line, producer Jeff Azzopardi. How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm okay. Flying solo. Tough shoes to fill, those of Tim McAuliffe's.
Mm-hmm.
But the federal election in the States gave us a little bit of material today.
It did. How did you like the coverage last night?
I thought NBC's was... I'm going to go completely against what Eric Smith told us. NBC sucked. NBC, who have by far the best host in the business. Nobody can touch Brian Williams, either in Canada or the States. Nobody can touch him. Their coverage was just, it wasn't good. I need to be able to turn onto your network and immediately know that Mitt Romney's up 33-3 in the Electoral College vote. I don't care about the Senate right now. It's important, but I don't care. That's not why I'm watching. Little things like that bug me. So I couldn't watch NBC for long. So I stayed with Wolf.
Who's your favorite political correspondent, let's say?
Like a pundit or anything? Who's my favorite guy? Well, actually, it's not a guy. Rachel Maddow is becoming one of my favorite political hosts slash pundits slash, because I think she's phenomenal. She's one of the smartest people out there. She's a tremendous broadcaster. And I like Brian Williams. Call me crazy. I like Bill O'Reilly. I don't agree with Bill O'Reilly. I think he's very talented. So that's my holy trinity.
All right. What was your biggest storyline besides the actual presidency last night?
What was my biggest storyline of the night?
Besides, you know, Obama being reelected, was there another storyline that caught your eye from last night?
Oh, Diane Sawyer. Did you hear Diane Sawyer on ABC last night?
No.
So listen, I've tried to be careful with this. On the advice of Stephen Brund, because there could have been a medical condition in play, I scoured the internet. ABC has not released a statement that Diane Sawyer was
which you would expect
ill
in 24
or suffered
hours.
Something on air. No. So the question now is whether Diane Sawyer was on a pill or a little drunk. This is Diane Sawyer last night on ABC's desk. Have you heard this?
No.
This is ridiculous. She's throwing to some correspondents in the field, and this is how she sounded.
I have a question I wanted to ask, by the way. At one point, President Obama's campaign put an exclamation point after forward. It was just forward, and then it had an exclamation point. When did they decide that was the right message for them?
Now, that doesn't sound that bad. The visual is off a little bit. You kind of need the visual with that as well. But Diane Sawyer sounded like she was in a weird place. So drunk or not drunk? Initially, I said, a little drunk. I'm going to say maybe she was just really tired. I'm going to give Diane...
It is a long day.
Diane Sawyer has been doing this a long time.
I was going to say nothing like this
before. Give her the benefit of the doubt. But that went that little attempted throw at correspondence went viral pretty quickly from ABC.
Let's get to some sports questions really quick. Granger out 3 months for the Pacers. Does that put Indiana in jeopardy of not making the playoffs?
No.
No?
Their front court's that good. David West, I was at that opener last week. David West is a beast, man. He's an absolute beast. I don't care if you cover him properly or not. He's going to hit most of his shot.
Do you see any place for Jason Bay on the Blue Jays?
Jason Bay, for those who don't know, was bought out today by the Mets for a whopping $21 million. How about the Jays get a manager first?
That's a great point.
Hold off on all Jays questions with me. I don't want any Jays tweets until they get a manager. That's it. There is no other priority.
I think that's fair.
Get a manager. And they may already have a manager. Who knows? Alex Anthopoulos may have his guy. And we're just all out of the loop. Could be possible. Considering how this Jays team ended the year on multiple fronts, I don't know if I'm going to give them the benefit of that doubt. I don't know if they have their guy.
Finally, if Vince had stayed, would we have had a championship?
No, but you would have had a playoff team. That would have been a good core, man. Mitchell as a coach. Bosch. Carter. I'm trying to remember who else was on the team. You would have had a decent core. don't know about a championship, but they'd have been middle of the road Eastern Conference minimum. That has been rapid fire. Again, hopefully Tim McAuliffe is all right, just a little under the weather. And hopefully we filled our need for Timmy admirably. And again, I just want to thank everybody who showed up today, including Rob Babcock, who just called in, including Sam Mitchell. I'd like to thank Stephen Brunt and everyone who came by today. Quick reminder, tonight on the network, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, we have the Mavs, we have the Raptors. Coverage begins at 8 o'clock tonight. How can the Raptors recover and bounce back from, by far, their weakest performance of this very, very young season? Tonight will tell a lot. I want to make a projection. Sid Sixero projects they will lose, but play better. All right, I'm done. I'm out of here. Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan is next. We'll talk to you tomorrow. You've been listening to Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.